Trapp drove his heel toward the door handle, then stepped through the shattered doorway with his weapon raised. His chest was so tight from the adrenaline he could barely breathe. How long did he have left? 30 seconds? 20? The scene on the other side was chaos. The space was a high-ceilinged entrance room, paved with long, polished wooden floorboards. It was easily the largest room Trapp had encountered so far. The farmhouse's front door studded the opposite wall, and to the right of it was a staircase leading up to the second floor. Almost every inch of the space was covered with electronics. Wires, microchips, even something that resembled a satellite dish was mounted over an open windowsill, from which a tail of cables fed into a bank of computer monitors. They sat on a makeshift desk, pushed right up against the staircase, behind which sat a tiny, terrified man dressed in tattered clothing, his hand gripping a video game joystick. But that wasn't what attracted Trapp's attention. Madison was lying on the ground just to his right, her arms raised high over her shoulders and tied with zip cuffs to the staircase's banisters. Practically every inch of her body was covered with ugly purple and black bruises. Her lip was split and seemed to be held together only by an ugly mass of dark scabbing. She looked like she'd been through hell. And the big man, Omar, was holding a gun to her head. He was sheltering between the man controlling the drones and Madison herself. Trapp didn't have a shot. She looked up, eyes shining defiantly, and met Trapp's horrified gaze.
He's the only one left.
Omar jabbed her temple hard with the barrel of his pistol. Her head briefly slumped forward. Trapp stood frozen into inaction as he tried to figure out what the hell to do. He considered emptying the rest of his rifle's magazine into the drone control station, but had no idea what would happen if he did. Would the UAVs continue on their present path? In fact, where the hell were they? Omar finally spoke as Trapp's eyes began to wander over the computer screens.
You found us, but you're already too late.
Trapp said nothing. The brightness on both screens was cranked up all the way, which made it easy to make out what was displayed. Each was split into two, presumably leaving one monitor per drone. On the left-hand side of each screen, a variety of instruments were displayed. Altitude, airspeed, altimeter, artificial horizon. On the right was an infrared video feed. The two aircraft were traveling only a couple of hundred feet over the ground. He shifted his attention to the right-hand displays, unable to draw anything useful from the instrument readouts. He'd seen similar drone shots before. It was commonly used for night recon, when the visible light spectrum was consumed by darkness. But why use it now? An enormous structure loomed ahead of the two drones, growing larger with every passing moment. It took Trapp's brain a couple of seconds to process what he was seeing as he translated the glowing infrared feed into a more familiar picture. It was Oriole Park, a baseball stadium he'd visited more than once over the years. The drones hadn't hit their target, but they were close. Hell, he might only have 10 or 15 seconds before they crested the stadium's peak. He didn't even know if they could still be forced to abort the mission, or whether the two aircraft were following a predetermined flight plan. The guy operating the flight controls trembled. He looked as though he was slipping into shock. But if he was there at the controls, there had to be a chance.
Late? I don't think so.
He knew he had to act fast.
Drop the gun.
The pilot's innocent, Jason.
Silence!
Omar jabbed her once again with his pistol. The blow appeared hard enough to steal her from consciousness. Her chin slumped against her chest.
You prick.
Come any closer and I'll kill her. You know that I have no fear of death.
Trapp's finger tightened on the trigger. He could fire, but not without risking putting a round through the control station behind the terrorist. He took a step to the left, trying to open up a better firing angle, but had no luck.
Don't take another step. Move again, and I shoot.
Please. Please. You need to help me. They have my children. I have to do what they say or they...
He's correct. He knows what will happen if he fails to complete his task. So you see, you are too late.
As Trapp watched, the pilot pulled back on the joystick, and the two drones began to climb as though they were one. They were somehow slaved together, operating from the same controls. It was proof that this attack could still be stopped. On the computer monitors, the all-encompassing view of the baseball park disappeared as the noses lifted upward, and it was replaced by a fuzzy view of the night sky. They were climbing, which meant they were gaining altitude to position themselves for the final descent, to attack. He had to end this now, but how? Surely he couldn't talk the pilot into signing a death warrant for his own children. Few men had the moral courage to sacrifice their own flesh and blood, even if the alternative tore the world apart. Hell, Trapp wasn't even sure that he himself would be able to do such a thing. Madison stirred beside Omar, whose attention was now focused entirely on Trapp. She was moving sluggishly, but she was moving. The drones stopped climbing. For a second, they leveled out in midair, and then their noses began to drop. Once again, the infrared images glowed with information as it translated the millions of light sources reflecting up from the ground below. And finally, Trapp understood the purpose of the infrared display. A bright glow occupied an entire inch of the middle of each infrared image. He'd seen that kind of thing before. A laser was painting the target, guiding the drones in. That was the purpose of the North Korean seeker head. So the drones would hit directly on target. The president. Trapp couldn't see the man himself, but he had no doubt what he was watching. The terrorists had someone inside the stadium. That explained the fact that al-Shaqiri himself was missing in action. The bastard was there, somehow aiming a laser at Nash without being spotted. Trapp began to calculate his next, his only, course of action. He couldn't shoot either the pilot or Omar, not without risking destroying the controls. Though he was barely 6 feet away from seizing the joystick himself, he couldn't move without risking Omar shooting Madison. But that was his only option if he wanted to stop this, and he guessed he had a matter of seconds remaining.
You still with me?
Madison looked up and met his gaze. She looked woozy and yet determined.
Mm-hmm.
Trapp grinned, hoping to all hell she was awake enough to understand what he meant.
Hungry?
She frowned with confusion, then her expression cleared with what he desperately hoped was understanding. She nodded, the movement jerking Omar's pistol a couple of inches away from her right temple. The terrorist's expression tightened.
Now.
Madison yanked her head back into the left, then swung it in the other direction. She bit down hard on Omar's wrist, digging her teeth into his flesh and tendons. Blood spurted, coating her teeth and lips. A gunshot echoed as his trigger finger reflexively squeezed. Trapp didn't hesitate. He threw himself forward as the terrorist yelled in pain and frustration, clearing the distance that separated them in less than 2 steps. As he moved, he reversed his rifle in his hands, drew it back, and smashed its stock as hard as he could into Omar's skull. It was a knockout blow. He heard the terrorist's pistol drop to the floor. He didn't have time to kick it away. The drones were diving fast, gaining speed and losing altitude with every passing second. In just moments, it would be too late. He grabbed the pilot instead, squeezing his shoulders.
Pull up!
When the man didn't respond, he threw him aside and took over himself. He had no idea what he was doing, but pulled the joystick toward himself as hard as he dared, not knowing if the sudden shift in altitude and speed would only cause the UAVs to stall out. Perhaps it would save the president's life, only to condemn dozens, even hundreds of those who had come to see him, to a sudden and fiery death as the two drones careered toward the bleachers. He heard a scuffle behind him, then the telltale sound of a pistol skidding along the floor. He dared not take his eyes away from the computer screens in front of him, despite every instinct in his body screaming at him to do otherwise.
Come on!
He spoke as though his words might help bend the laws of physics. The airspeed readouts were climbing, not falling. The two drones were plummeting ever faster toward the ground. Faces glowed like stars in the infrared displays. It was impossible to be sure, but Trapp imagined hundreds, thousands of first curious, then terrified men, women, and children staring up at him. He watched a disturbance in the crowd as the view screen narrowed, drawing closer and closer in on a single stand. The drones were now doing over 400 miles an hour. Alarms blared through the control station's speakers, and a variety of gauges and dials blinked red as the flight software warned of imminent failure. Seconds remained to disaster.
Jason! He's coming around!
Trapp spared a glance over his shoulder and saw that she was right. Omar blinked groggily as if his surroundings were a surprise to him. Then consciousness returned to the brute's mind.
Oh, shit.
He pulled back harder on the joystick. Wait, had he imagined it? Or had the view screen ticked up a foot? No, it was real. It happened again. A row of innocent, panicking civilians disappeared from the bottom of both screens. Then another. Then entire sections of the stadium disappeared from view as the drones' noses pulled up. Trapp clenched his fist around the joystick in triumph. He kept the control pulled as far back as he dared, watching as the airspeed readouts briefly touched 450 miles an hour, hanging there for a long moment before falling back. the airspeed display began to tumble. First 400 miles an hour, then 350, then 325, 300, before it dropped into the twos. The stadium disappeared from the view screen entirely. The artificial horizon dial wobbled from side to side as wind and speed battered the two airframes, but both began to climb. The second that the video feeds both showed nothing but sky, Trapp put the two drones into a shallow but stable climb, not confident enough in his piloting abilities to know how hard he could push them. The altitude readout started to climb. A wave of relief flooded through him.
Talk to me, Madison.
It sounded as though she was trying to say something but was unable. Ashen-faced and trembling, she choked out his name.
Jason!
He whipped his gaze in her direction, not sensing the incoming attack until an instant before Omar hurtled into him. Trapp released his grip on the joystick as he crashed to the floor, whipping his hand away as though he'd touched a hot stove. He was robbed of breath by the enormous bulk of the man who had collided with him. Tears formed at the corners of his eyes from the pain, and acid was forced up his windpipe from his compressed stomach. If it wasn't for the presence of his ballistic vest, which absorbed some of the force of the blow, he would almost certainly have broken half a dozen ribs on impact. Omar was like a linebacker driving forward through the tackle. Trapp found himself swept forward like debris on a tidal wave, powerless to resist. The strength of the man he was up against was almost impossible to comprehend. He was lying on his back, looking up at the ceiling through blurred eyes.
Jason!
Madison was finally able to speak. He managed to catch a fragmentary glimpse of her. She fruitlessly yanked her bound wrists against the banisters, angry tears glinting in her eyes. And then Omar reared up, replacing her in Trapp's vision. He was a fearsome sight. His hands formed fists as he prepared to strike the stunned man on the floor below him. Trapp sat up dumbly, his reactions slowed by the lack of oxygen making it to his brain. He knew he was supposed to do something to stop this.
Roll!
The instinctive command came from somewhere deep within. He obeyed without questioning, twisting to his right with his last reserves of energy as darkness swept in on all sides. His chest heaved, muscles still twitching from the earlier impact, and yet somehow he forced himself to twist through two full messy rotations along the floor. Dulled by a combination of anger and frustration, Omar didn't react in time. He brought his fists down in a powerful pre-planned blow, trying to pull away at the last second, not fast enough. He beat the empty floor beneath him. Trapp dug his heels into the floor and pushed himself backward, struggling for every measly inch of space he could put between him and his attacker. The first few breaths tasted like the sweetest mountain air. He sucked at it greedily, awareness of his senses opening back up like a driver exiting a long tunnel. He searched for his opponent. Omar looked left at the exact moment. He held his right fist up in the air as his face contorted in a rictus of agonized fury. Trapp wondered if he'd broken a bone in his hand.
You deserve it, you prick.
For a moment, both men observed a silent truce as they gathered up their strength for the battle to come. Trapp's chest heaved as he glanced down, searching for the pistol he'd earlier thrust through the elastic loop on the front of his ballistic vest. It was gone. Somehow knocked out from the force of the impact. It must have fallen somewhere inaccessible. That wasn't ideal, but at least Omar wasn't armed either. He was, unfortunately, a hell of a lot bigger than Trapp. Trapp's body still smarted from the fundamental truth of it. He felt like a chimney sweep stepping into a ring with a sumo wrestler. As one, both men seemed to decide that the truce was over. Omar clenched his injured fist once more, gritting his teeth over the pain that ensued. He climbed to his feet. Trapp was surprised that the ground didn't shake underneath him as he copied the movement. The two men circled each other in the large space, never breaking eye contact, never giving the other the opportunity to strike. The pilot Trapp had wrenched aside was now cowering somewhere to his left, separated from the drone control station by the two circling predators. Madison was to his right, still manacled to the stairs, trying to struggle upright to somehow break free of her bonds.
Give it up, asshole! You lost! It's over. Surrender now. Make it easy for yourself.
He spoke as loudly as possible, wondering as he did where the hell Pope had gotten to. Had one of those bullets done more damage than he'd initially thought? They needed medical attention here, and backup. Where the hell was their backup? He dared not take his eyes off the dangerous terrorist opposite long enough to even check how Madison was doing. She'd sustained a heavy blow to her temple. Her movements were sluggish and erratic. If she had a brain bleed, she might take a turn for the worse in a matter of seconds. He needed to end this, fast. Trap grinned, showing his opponent that he wasn't scared of him, despite the fact that he resembled a Viking berserker who'd come off his meds.
Are you deaf? Or just stupid?
Go to hell.
That's up in the air for me. But not for you, I don't think.
What are you talking about?
You think your god is gonna look kindly on this clusterfuck? If you're gonna do something, at least do it right. It was a good plan. You just screwed it up.
Omar's temple pulsated with internalized rage, but he didn't take the bait.
Adnan, do you love your wife? Your children? Your beautiful daughter?
Trap glanced at him for a fraction of a second, not stopping circling, unwilling to give up any advantage.
Ignore him, Adnan. It's over. The police are on their way.
They're on their way here, Adnan. But my men are already at your home. They will kill your family unless you do exactly as I say. Take the controls and finish this, or let them die. You choose.
It was immediately clear to Trap that this man, Adnan, was no hardened terrorist, just an innocent man acting under coercion. Yet he was no less dangerous for it.
Don't listen to him.
Trap was still pacing to the left, maintaining separation between him and Omar. Every few steps, he scanned the ground, searching for one of the two dropped pistols, but found only the rifle he'd struck Omar with, which was lying tangled in the cables behind the drone control station. There was no way he could access it in time. Adnan was succumbing to panic. That suited Trap just fine. All he needed was the man to stay out of it. He had no doubt that President Nash had now long since been hustled out of Oriole Park by the Secret Service and into the hardened presidential limo known as the Beast, but there were still hundreds of juicy targets that could be struck in downtown Baltimore.
End this, Adnan!
Omar glanced at the cowering Turkish engineer to drive his message home, and taking his eyes off the ground underneath him at precisely the wrong time. His foot caught on a toolbox and he stumbled forward, arms flailing at his side. Trap struck. He pitched himself forward from the soles of his boots and charged. The Syrian tried to right himself in midair, but without anything to grasp, only flailed his arms harder. The two men collided in the center of the room. Trap dropped his shoulder a second before impact, then bucked it up as he felt contact, tensing his core and driving upward with all his might. He used Omar's own momentum to flip him through the air. He sailed headfirst toward the ground. Omar came down to earth heavily, the impact first forcing the breath from his lungs, then a crack as a bone snapped in his wrist. He rolled onto his back and stared up at his crippled left arm, now useless after the combined blows of a broken, bitten hand and a fractured wrist. A flash of rage washed through Trap now, the heat of the anger burning away the frustration of failure and disappointment that had been building for the last 2 weeks. Hell, the last 5 years, ever since Khaled al-Shaqiri had first disappeared without a trace. The mastermind of so much evil and hatred wasn't here to pay for his sins, but his right-hand man was.
Get up.
Trap wasn't tired any longer. He no longer felt pain. He welcomed this fight, and he didn't want to stop until Omar was beaten to a bloodied pulp for everything he'd done. It was a stupid, irrational reaction. Even as he stood there, eyeing his enemy on the ground, Trap knew that he was going against all his training. He should have charged right then and there, kicked Omar hard in the side of his torso, then brought his heel down on the man's face as he writhed in pain. He should have, but he didn't. Trap wanted a fight, but not to inflict a beating. He wanted to suffer, as if the pain he'd take in doing so was some kind of cleansing. Omar gripped his left wrist. His face had turned to ashen white. If Trap wasn't careful, he'd slip into shock, and that just would not do.
I said, get up, or are you too much of a coward?
The jibe seemed to burst through his opponent's agony. Omar rolled onto his front, pulling his injured, non-dominant hand to his chest as he struggled to his feet. He turned to face Trap, baring his teeth in defiance.
Show me what you got, asshole.
Trap felt bloodlust building inside him. He rarely gave in to his basest instincts, but he would today. Omar dropped his shoulder and charged. Trap waited until the moment of impact, then stepped to his left like a trained matador, executing a vicious blow with his right elbow as his opponent passed. It was a glancing hit. He grimaced with frustration, knowing he'd squandered a perfect opportunity. The big man spun and didn't stop. His chest heaved heavily from the combination of exertion, frustration, and pain that had to be coursing through him. He came for Trap again, and something in his eyes said that he wouldn't fall for the same trick twice. Trap pulled his right elbow back and snapped his torso around, putting all his momentum behind a powerful blow. He drove his fist directly into Omar's face, and his opponent didn't even look away. He felt bone and cartilage snap underneath his knuckles, but even the agony of a broken nose didn't appear to have cut through the frenzy now driving him. Omar pushed forward, driving through Trap and physically forcing him back. Trap stumbled on something underfoot and fell hard to the ground, landing heavily on his ass. As the terrorist passed over him, he brought his right heel down hard, striking the center of Trap's chest.
Jason!
But he had no attention to spare. Omar was hurt badly, but he had no intention of giving up. It was clear that Trap was in the fight of his life. It was equally certain that he now had at least one broken rib, and probably more. He allowed himself a flash of guilt that he'd thrown Madison's lot in with his own fate, but now wasn't the time for introspection. He flung himself upright, backing away as the world swayed around him. He reached for the rage that had driven him this far and pushed on. Omar was bigger than he was. That mask could easily tell. It would only take one lucky blow to succeed in stunning him, and this thing would be over. Omar now had a weakness. He was angling his right shoulder forward to hide his injured wrist. Trap knew he had to take advantage of it to bring this fight to a close. Trap only half-faked doubling over. He placed his left hand on his knee and sucked in air, grimacing from the pain this caused him. Omar began edging toward him. He backed away another step, injecting sluggishness to his movements. His opponent's face lit up as he decided he had his measure, and he came for Trap yet again, clenching his right fist and driving it through the air. Blow caught Trap in the stomach. He twisted to his side at the precise moment of impact, not to dodge the strike, but in the act of extending his own right hand. He cast it out and grabbed Omar's injured wrist, closing his fingers in a vise around it and twisting hard, even as he rocked from the impact of the punch. Omar jerked instinctively away, the whites of his eyes growing wide and swallowing his beady pupils whole. He now resembled a panicked beast. Trap gritted his teeth and held on tight, securing his grip, then pulled the man hard toward him. The powerful terrorist jerked like a puppet on a string as he stumbled forward, whimpering in pain. Trap swept his clenched left fist down hard, aiming for the trapped, shattered wrist. He felt the joint pop, practically exploding from the force of the impact. The Syrian sank to his knees, his arm still pulled upward like an anchor line. Trap didn't pause. He switched his grip, then drove his right elbow down against Omar's defenseless, swaying skull with all the force he could muster. His opponent collapsed as all electrical impulses traveling through his nervous system shorted out. He lay at Trap's feet, his chest barely rising and falling. Trap kicked him in the torso once for good measure, but it was like hitting a sack of meat. There was no reaction, no cry of pain, no flinching, no nothing. Trap drew his leg back, giving in to an ancient primal anger. He didn't just want to beat his enemies, he wanted to destroy them.
Jason, stop!
The familiar voice sounded impossibly distant through his berserker rage. Blood hissed in his ears like a mountain waterfall, deadening all other sound.
It's over.
Trap wanted to ignore the voice, to give in to his basest instincts. He looked down at the unconscious terrorist and felt a fresh geyser of fury rising within him. This bastard had caused so much harm to so many innocent people. All for what? He had tried to kill the president, attempted to provoke a fresh wave of violent religious conflict across the entire Islamic world, and attempted to pull the United States into yet another fruitless, draining war. And he deserved to suffer for it. But Trap knew it wasn't right. He looked up to see that Pope had stumbled into view. He was clutching his right shoulder and had the shotgun sandwiched in between his right arm and his torso. His fingers were stained with blood, and his face was taut with pain.
I guess he got me after all. I blacked out for a bit. Sorry I missed the show.
Don't be. The reviews were shitty anyway.
He looked up sharply, searching for Adnan, and to his horror saw that the man was once again seated behind the flight controls.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Adnan turned, eyes wide with fear at the clearly unexpected reprimand.
Jason, he's okay. He's piloting them somewhere safe. He said they're equipped with an explosive payload. We need to get them out of the city.
In the distance, Trap finally heard the wail of incoming sirens.
Better late than never.
He looked around for zip cuffs of the type that had been used to secure Madison. He saw a handful of them lying by her side. He cut her free, then trussed Omar by the wrists and ankles. He saw that Pope had his cell phone clutched in his right hand, along with the shotgun.
What about Al-Shaqiri?
It's chaos out there. Secret Service are sealing the stadium down. But we might have lost him. Too early to say.
Trap turned to look at Madison, suddenly lost to indecision. He wanted to end this, and yet he couldn't bring himself to leave her alone. There was no such confusion on her face.
Go!
Are you sure?
She mustered a strained grin.
I'll survive. Just promise me one thing.
What?
That you'll get the bastard.
The unmarked FBI Suburban came to a halt, and Trap leaped out, leaving the engine running. He ducked underneath the police tape, only to run into a pair of local cops, both of whose hands went to their weapons. He didn't blame them. He already had the markings of a black eye sustained sometime during the battle with Omar, and there was a rip in the upper sleeve of his t-shirt. He was still wearing the Bureau's ballistic vest and had only delayed long enough before hurrying to the scene of the attempted drone attack to move the pistol that had previously been looped through the elastic on its front to a side holster. To forestall a confrontation, Trap reached into his pocket and pulled out Pope's FBI credentials, flicking the leather case closed before either officer had a chance to realize he wasn't who he was claiming to be.
I need to speak to the incident commander. Where can I find him?
The two cops visibly relaxed. One of them, a woman, gestured toward a large truck trailer unit that was about 50 yards away.
Secret Service is in overall command of the scene. Ought to know anything more than that.
Thanks, officer.
Trap was already hurrying toward the crime scene's nerve center. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of people milled around him, wearing a variety of expressions. Some seemed confused. Others were still shaking with fear or had gone numb with shock. Others still were borderline ecstatic, riding high off the adrenaline of the near-death experience. In the distance, he could see media crews setting up and hoped he was far enough away to avoid being caught on camera. The last thing he needed was for his cover to be blown by a video editor selecting the wrong piece of footage for the nightly news. And there was no doubt that the day's events would lead the news for weeks. There would have been dozens of cameras focused on Nash as he announced his re-election bid, hundreds, perhaps thousands more in the audience watching. An agent in a Secret Service sport coat held up a hand to stop Trap as he approached the command trailer.
Hold up. I need to see some ID.
Trap attempted to sidestep the man, but pulled up short as the agent artfully blocked his path. He considered flashing Pope's badge a second time, but guessed that the agent would know better than to fall for the trick he'd pulled with the two local cops.
You were here when those drones came in?
Sir, I'm still going to need to see—
I was the one who stopped the attack. They're both carrying a 100-pound fragmentation warhead. Why don't you ask your boss if he wants to speak to me?
His mouth gaping, the agent reached for a radio handset clipped to his waist and called it in. A few moments later, the door to the command trailer swung open, clattering against the hard shell wall. A man wearing suit pants and a navy blue windbreaker emerged. His head was shaved and gleamed in the late afternoon sun. He glanced around, searching for the source of the radio call, then beckoned Trap to join him. The uniformed Secret Service agent stepped aside, and he did as he was bid. Trap approached the man in the windbreaker.
Name?
Jason Trap.
Agency?
Exactly.
Huh? Oh, right. You're CIA?
Yes, sir, I am. If you need to confirm
Don't
that...
Don't worry about it. I can smell it on you. Name's Liam Curry. I was incident commander for this shit show. Probably gonna be my last rodeo, so I might as well enjoy it. I want you to tell me what the hell just happened. I've never seen anything like it before. Looked like a pair of MQ-9 Reapers swooped down out of the sky. Our countermeasures didn't do shit. It was a miracle nobody got killed.
Not a miracle, Agent Curry. Her name is Madison.
Trapp knew that if the call to the FBI tip line had come in just a few minutes later, if he and Pope hadn't accepted the tasking and gone to check it out, then the unthinkable would most certainly have come to pass.
Who's behind this, Trapp? My people are hunting a damn cripple.
The president's safe?
Of course he is. Answer the question.
It was an Islamic State plot.
The missile thing? I read the bulletin about it the other day.
That's where the evidence was pointing. We didn't put everything together until about a half an hour ago.
Just in time, I suppose.
Curry shook his head in frustration.
God, he could have been killed on my damn watch. This is a brave new world, Trapp. How the hell are we supposed to defend our principles against military-grade drone attacks?
Well, that's your job, not mine.
Yeah, but for how much longer?
Curry then seemed to straighten and forget his own personal troubles.
I'm guessing from that black eye you're sporting that you were the one who sent us the warning about the guy in the wheelchair.
Not just me.
Well, whatever. I guess I owe you my thanks.
Just tell me you know where he is.
The image of Madison's battered face flashed across his mind.
Who?
Khaled al-Shakiri. He masterminded this whole thing.
Let's step inside.
The two men stepped inside the trailer.
First thing we did after crashing the president was lock down the entire area. Could be a few dozen people got out, but the moment we ascertained there was no secondary attack, we sealed it up tight.
Trapp got a few stray, curious glances as he entered, but within a moment, the agents operating the computer terminals inside the trailer focused back on their work. Curry pointed at the topmost right screen, which was focused on the exterior of a large multi-story red brick building with white painted facings that was surrounded by a ring of dozens, perhaps hundreds, of armed cops and federal agents.
We think this al-Shakiri character is holed up somewhere in the old Babe Ruth Museum. Hey, Jake, run that footage back.
What do you mean, old?
A video file was pulled up onto an adjacent display.
Lease ran out. It's currently under construction. Not sure who or what took it over. We're just waiting for local SWAT to tool up. Should be another 20 minutes, no longer than that.
Mind if I go down there to see it for myself?
You'll get a better view from in here, but be my guest. Like I said, I owe you one. I'll never grouse about a CYA agency briefing entering my entree again.
Trapp made his way down to the scene of the standoff, but not before plucking a dark blue baseball cap from where it lay on the sidewalk, presumably knocked off at some point during the chaos of the last hour. He approached one of the cops deployed on the perimeter, crossing his arms over his chest as he looked at the surrounded building.
Any sign of movement?
The officer was staring down the barrel of an M4 rifle, which was aimed at one of the building's windows.
No, sir.
You guys sure he's in there?
No way out. We got officers in the sewers just in case they try and make a break for it.
You think it's just the two of them?
Sir, they don't tell me shit.
Trapp grinned, despite the severity of the situation.
Yeah, guess sometimes that's how it goes.
Trapp rubbed his chin as he watched the building site. It was surrounded by metal fencing, covered with lime green banners, printed with a construction firm's logo that blocked the first floor from view. Curry had informed him that the building site was supposed to be empty that day on account of the rally. He swept his gaze across the windows on the second floor. Most of them were covered in plastic sheeting to prevent accidental damage during the refurbishment process. As his eyes passed over one of them, he thought he might have seen a shadow wash over it and paused for a long moment to study it, but nothing further presented itself.
All units, hold your positions. SWAT will stay back until we get a negotiator on site.
What's there to negotiate?
You're telling me. You think the assholes in there had something to do with those drones?
Your guess is as good as mine.
The cop glanced at him curiously.
Yeah, I doubt that. But listen, I didn't vote for that Nash guy. But he's still the president, you know? This is America. You don't like him, go ahead and boot him out of office. You don't get to take matters into your own hands.
No, you don't.
An image of Eddie Muniz floated into his mind's eye. Eddie still looked in his 20s, the way Trapp remembered him. Young, with so much life ahead of him. Acid gnawed at his stomach from the guilt at sending his friend to an early grave. The decision hardened in his mind before he knew he'd made it. He took a first step through the crowd of cops that surrounded the building, then another.
Hey, jackass! Where the hell do you think you're going?
Trapp ignored it, picking up the pace as he neared the entrance to the worksite at the front of the building. He drew his pistol, then hurdled a barrier. The exertion gave him a twinge of pain from the right side of his torso, presumably wrenched in his fight with Omar. He blocked out the growing cacophony behind him as he thought over his tactical position. There was almost no chance that either Al-Shaqiri or his minder were armed, since they would have, by necessity, passed through the Secret Service security gauntlet on their way into the baseball stadium. He briefly considered the possibility that one of the two might have been wearing an explosive vest, but discounted it for the same reason. A calm drew over him as he crossed the dusty space between the security barriers around the worksite and the building itself. The main door had been removed and was covered only with a thin layer of transparent plastic sheeting. He pulled it aside and ducked underneath. The entire bottom floor of the building had been cleared out and was self-evidently empty. Trapp took in the entire space, his gaze only interrupted by a few concrete pillars that supported the floor above. He paused for a moment and scanned the space around him, just in case. It was clear.
Where are you, asshole?
He picked up his pace. The last thing he wanted was to be interrupted by the SWAT team, who were no doubt already hustling to get into place while cursing the moron who had just walked into the building. He would have to apologize to them, but that could wait until this was over. Trapp spied a staircase to his left and paced toward it with his pistol held level in front of him. He heard the muffled sound of voices from upstairs. He couldn't make out what they were saying, or even the language. He crept slowly up the stairs, stopping every 30 seconds or so to cock his ear and listen. They weren't far. He paused just before cresting the second floor and took a deep breath. He lowered his hands onto the topmost step and inched above the floor line so that he could just see what lay beyond. Like the floor below, all interior drywall had been cleared from the space. A few pieces of construction machinery rested on the floor, but that wasn't what drew Trapp's attention. Al-Shaqiri was slumped against a concrete pillar, clutching his stomach. His wheelchair was compacted for transport and lay at his side. He was breathing heavily, his agony audible in the empty space. His companion had fallen silent and was holding the back of his own head as he stared at the floor. Time to end this. Trapp sprung upward, sensing no other threats. The able-bodied man spun around at the sound of his footsteps, fear washing over his face. Figuring that he presented the most immediate threat, Trapp aimed at his center mass, at least until he did something unexpected, and dropped to the ground. He splayed his arms and legs wide.
Don't shoot me. Please, just don't shoot me. I did what she said.
It was Ricky.
Stay where you are. Place your hands on the back of your head.
He watched as the terrified young man complied. He was now crying freely.
Are you armed?
No, I swear. I don't know what they were planning.
Just shut the fuck up.
Trapp was no longer in the mood to care. He took several steps to his right so that he could keep Ricky in his sight and switched his aim to Al-Shaqiri.
What about him? Is he carrying?
Ricky looked uncertainly up from the ground.
I don't think so.
Get up.
Trapp looked away and met Al-Shaqiri's gaze.
Search him.
He waited until Ricky was done. He did a surprisingly professional job, then lay back down on the ground of his own accord, tears marking the dusty concrete floor. Trapp walked slowly over to Al-Shaqiri, not looking away once. He crouched down in front of him, leveling the pistol at the man's head and putting an ounce of pressure on the trigger. Another ounce, maybe two, that's all it would take.
Do it! Pull the trigger. I know you want to.
Yeah.
Trapp leaned forward and placed his left hand around the terrorist's neck and squeezed.
You deserve it, you piece of shit.
Then do it.
A sheen of sweat glistened on his skin. He was ashen-faced and looked to be at death's door. Trapp brought the barrel of his pistol down and pressed it against the terrorist's forehead as hard as he could. He squeezed his eyes shut and pictured Eddie and Madison and the Iraqi girl from all those years back. He knew that Khaled Al-Shaqiri deserved to die 100 times over. The man encapsulated pure evil, perhaps more than anyone he had ever come across. His hands shook from the pressure on the trigger. The slightest movement would be enough.
What are you waiting for?
Trapp's heartbeat thudded in his chest as he heard engines roaring outside, the sound audible through the empty building's walls. SWAT was making their move. He didn't have long. Trapp's eyes snapped open. He stared down at Al-Shaqiri, saw the manic gleam in the man's eyes, and realized that he no longer felt anger for the terrorist underneath him, just disgust.
It's going to hurt, you know.
He leaned backward and sat down heavily on the concrete floor. He safetied his pistol and returned it to his holster.
What are you talking about?
Knowing you came so close. I hope you liked prison, asshole, because you're going back. And this time, you're not getting out.
Epilogue. Madison's private room at Johns Hopkins Hospital was festooned with flowers, boxes of chocolates, and other get-well-soon gifts. Trapp stepped inside quietly as he realized that she was sleeping. He folded his arms across his chest, horrified by what he saw. The CIA analyst had taken a horrific beating. He would be surprised if she climbed out of that bed before a couple of weeks.
I should have moved quicker.
You took your time.
Trapp started as he heard Madison's voice. Her eyes flickered open.
You're awake.
Nothing gets past you. You know, there might be an open slot in the intel shop. I could put in a good word.
He walked over to her, guilt clenching his chest with every step he took, and stopped.
After what you did? I think if you told the director to jump, he'd ask how high. You saved the president's life, Madison.
I think you had something to do with that. I was a little tied up.
Yeah.
It was a joke, Jason. If I can laugh about it, you damn well have to.
I guess.
How do I look?
She pushed herself up on the pillows at the head of the bed.
You want the truth?
Always.
Like shit.
Trapp studied Madison's battered face. Her lip had been closed with a couple of stitches, and bandages covered other contusions on her face. Both her eyes were black.
And it's only gonna get worse.
Yeah, I figured that. What happened at the stadium? Nobody's telling me anything.
We got him. They built a laser designator into a Nikon DSLR camera. The thing didn't actually take photos, but it looked like it did. That's how they planned to guide the drones onto the target.
Alive or dead?
I could have pulled the trigger. Nobody would have known. But I let them take him in.
He'd been playing the decision over 100 times in his mind. About half those times, he went the other way.
It's better that way. That son of a bitch is gonna stare at a wall for the rest of his life, knowing he screwed up. And every now and then, I'm gonna pay him a visit and remind him of exactly that.
He didn't doubt that she would do it.
You mind if I join you?
Anytime. Can you do me a favor, Jason?
Sure.
I need a beer.
The moment they discharge you, I'm there. You got a bar in mind?
Her eyes flashed at him.
I mean now. I refused painkillers, and now I'm starting to regret my decision. I need to take the edge off.
Trapp decided to play for time.
How do you suggest we get past the nurses? You're not exactly inconspicuous right now.
Madison's flashing eyes rolled.
Jason, you're supposed to be the freaking spy. I'm pretty sure you'll figure it out.
Jason Trapp, Book 8, Hand of God, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2022, Jack Slater, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2025, Graphic Audio, LLC, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford as narrator, Wynn Delano as Jason Trapp, Nora Ashrati as Madison Grubb, Peter Holdway as Khaled Al-Shaqiri, and James Konacek as Omar, with additional performances by Mark Harrietta, Jacob Yeh, Bradley Foster Smith, Drew Kopas, Chris Stinson, Kevil Shaw, Andy Clements, Elias Khalil, Matthew Bassett, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, Ken Jackson, Steve Wanall, David Quiqui, David M. Jordan, Terrence Aselford, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Christopher Walker, Ryan Haugen, Christopher Williams, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, Tyler Herchuk, Karen Novak, and Jerry J. Marshall. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Connor McGinley. If you enjoyed Jason Trapp, Hand of God, be sure to check out our whole catalog of exciting releases at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a sample clip of Amelia Peabody, The Mummy Case, now available in graphic audio.
I don't care for them, Peabody. The noble amateur villain is much more to my taste.
Or, which is in my opinion more likely, Hamid decided to set up in business for himself, thus robbing the ring of the profits to which they believed themselves entitled. The master criminal is unquestionably the most likely suspect.
Oh, quite.
Emerson folded his arms.
I suppose you have deduced the identity of this mysterious, one might almost say, apocryphal figure?
Hardly apocryphal, Emerson. We can now be certain that more than one evildoer is involved, for Hamid was not the person who entered Ramsay's room last night. He had been dead for several days, probably since the night of the fire.
I grant you a gang, Peabody, though that is stretching the evidence. But a master criminal?
A gang must have a leader, Emerson. Naturally, I have given some thought as to who he may be. I turned over a page of my notebook. Now pray, don't interrupt me again. This is a complex problem and you will confuse me.
I wouldn't do that for the world.
The master criminal is obviously not what he seems.
Brilliant, Peabody.
Please, Emerson. What I mean to say is that he, or she, for one must not denigrate the natural talents of the so-called weaker sex. Where was I?
I have no idea, Peabody.
The master criminal undoubtedly has another persona. He, or she, may be in outward appearance the most respectable of individuals. A missionary? A Russian nobleman, a German baroness, an archaeologist?
I assure you, Peabody, I am not your master criminal. I claim an alibi. You know where I am at night.
I never suspected you, Emerson.
Oh, I am relieved to hear it, Peabody.
Let us take the suspects in order. First, Brother Ezekiel. What do we know of him before he appeared at Mazguna this year? I don't doubt that the Brothers of the Holy Jerusalem are a legitimate sect, but they seem only too ready to accept plausible scoundrels into their ranks. The entire mission staff may be involved. Brother David as the liaison between Ezekiel and the Cairo underworld, and Miss Charity as a decoy. Her presence adds a look of innocence to the group. Emerson's interest was growing, but he tried to hide it.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.